There's an old saying, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. But you don't have time for play, do you? The time you used to use on your commute, which you thought would be freed up for you to spend time with your family or to collect stamps or, I don't know, whatever else your hobby would be, it's now absorbed probably with more work than ever before. I mean, that is the brutal reality of it, isn't it? Jobs are scarce. You need to perform. But what if your job is making you worse at work? And what if you had interests outside of work that had nothing to do with your day job, but actually enhanced your performance? It's quite a convoluted idea. Basically, your job is making you rubbish at your job if you don't have outside interests. Rich Mulholland is the owner of Missing Link, the founder of Missing Link. He is a public speaker. He's a thinker on things such as this. And he is an avid hobbyist in many, many respects. Why are hobbies in adults so important, Rich Mulholland?
Well, Bruce, in my mind, I think that in life you don't get to check the box that says you're successful unless you first check the box that says you're happy. And I think that if we're only working for the sake of work, there's a problem. So for me, in order to be able to check that happiness box, I have to have some recreational obsessions where I get to turn on the part of my brain that gets excited. You know, that super excited part of my brain in something that isn't just what pays my bills.
I mean, aren't hobbies very Enid Blyton? I mean, if I go into a Secret Seven book or a Famous Five book, they've all got hobbies. Hobbies feel like they come from a different era.
I think they do. And I think part of the reason that we feel that is because hobbies were something that we felt made sense when we were young. But I think you could make a case for hobbynomics in that if you look at the where people spend their money, even in times when they're running low, they will actually still spend more than the average on their hobby. I think you could create a bell curve with early adopters and laggards and all those things in every single area where a certain subset of the market are always spending more, faster and earlier than anybody else. And that is because it feeds into their recreational obsession. Just ask somebody who has the hobby of vinyl records or, you know, an audiophile or a cyclist, for goodness sake. You know, people will pay way more for a bicycle that's ever so slightly lighter, even though that may not make the difference. It might be a diminishing return, but it's because it's their obsession.
No, absolutely. I mean, I get this idea that, I mean, hobbies are things that take you away from your reality, don't they? I mean, if you talk about this recreational obsessions, this isn't something you do just because, hey, you need to fill the time. You've got Xbox to do that. You've got Netflix to fill time. All sorts of things can fill time. This is not about filling time. This is about making time for, I love the term obsessions.
Right. And, you know, I love what you said there about, and I absolutely am stealing that line about making time and filling time. But I love what you said about the Netflix and chill. You see, people finish their day at work and they've taken all that amazing part of their brain. So the people listening right now in the old days would be driving home and they'd be getting ready to switch off for the night. Isn't it unfair that you switch off when you get home? That's when we should be switching on, or should we be switching on something else? The problem is we're exhausted, so we want to do something different. Now, my hobby, as you know, Bruce, is I'm obsessed about board games. I love sitting down in the evening, and I could have had a crazy day where, you know, I'm going through big things and stresses at work, but I go home and I sit around the context with my family or with my friends in a board game, and we sit around a table, and that obsession of trying to solve a problem when the stakes are lower is incredible for me, because I get to use the bits of my brain that I find exciting in something that I find fulfilling in a different way to work. The other flip side of this, though, is that, so I have a bunch of hobbies from martial arts to different music genres to, you know, a whole bunch of different things that I'm obsessed with. And because of that, people say to me, you think outside the box, but I don't think outside the box. I just have a lot of boxes to think from. And the things I learn in different spheres of my recreational obsessions feed and make me better at my job every day.
Now, that's so interesting because, and you also talk, I mean, you're posting a lot of videos at the moment, and I was watching the video of you talking about hobbies and saying that, you know, unless you're Ross from Friends who is a paleontologist and sends people off to sleep, generally speaking, your hobbies make you more interesting. Your hobbies connect you with a different side of yourself. They connect you with different people, and it gives you, frankly, a different kind of contribution to make to society as you, you know, chat to people, or you plug the gaps in people's knowledge, for example.
Right. And I guess the key is not to talk about things that are your hobby so much as to talk about things that you learn from your hobby. Again, nobody wants to hear your story. They want you to help them tell a better version of theirs. So let's say if I was to talk to you about board games, you may be bored. But if we were having a conversation and I was to share with you a lesson I learned from, a game about the Napoleonic Wars and what I picked up from reading the backstory to make my strategy work better there, and then apply that thinking on something around the Battle of Waterloo, where, you know, Wellington won because he trained his soldiers to shoot a fourth shot per minute, where Napoleon was only shooting three shots per minute. Now, this is something that I learned while trying to be better at a board game, but I've applied that to talks that I've delivered all over the world. So it's the fact that information gets to sneak in unguarded. You know, for information in our office, everything goes through a filter. We like, oh, well, does this ring true with my truth? Does this make sense for the reality of what I should, you know, my business brain should understand? But when I'm sitting playing a game, I'm just taking in this knowledge, this information. And then sure enough, the next day I'll be sitting in a meeting and I'll turn around to my staff and say, no, we just need to get a fourth shot. We need to figure out what is that one thing that we can do better on repeat day in, day out to make a difference. And so the game informed my thinking just because I let those ideas sneak in like a Trojan horse.
And I love it because although you're switching off, or you're not switching off, you're changing tack. You are focusing on a completely different aspect of your brain. Your brain is relaxing because it's not obsessing about work. It's not obsessing about those problems. You're giving it a new set of problems that have no real world consequences. Yes, you may lose the board game, but it's not going to cost you money. Nobody's going to die. Well, unless you get really cross. But it's just this most wonderful release. And then to be able to apply the lessons, bizarrely, but I buy it from you, to the real world, again, sort of justifies the time out.
Right. And because the difference is that when you're watching Netflix, you're a passive participant. But when you're doing something, whatever your hobby is, you're an active participant. So although your brain is turned off from a business point of view, it's still very, very much turned on. But I also just think that it's great to have something to look forward to. I think our attention needs gravity. And it's great. I have a gravitational pull for a games night or for a great book that I'd be reading or to go out on my electric skateboards, which I love. I always am looking forward to something. And there's always something to fill a gap. It's not about switching off. It's about switching over. And unfortunately, so many adults I speak to don't have that. They just say at the end of the day, I just want to go home and switch off. And I think they'll find switching over will be more fulfilling for them. And I guess the challenge I'd just like to leave for people out there is to turn around and go back to that thing that you were last obsessed with that wasn't your job. And, you know, it could have been playing the guitar. It could have been, you know, anything from your youth. And to ask yourself, what if you turned that back on again? And could that or something similar add value to your life and help you check that happiness box instead of just trying to check the success one?
Rich Mulholland, thank you so much. Thought-provoking as always. Rich Mulholland is an extraordinary public speaker. He owns a business called Missing Link, which does presentations for people who struggle to communicate and helps people communicate better, and also bends your brain from time to time with his perspective on the world. Indeed, all work and no play makes everyone a dull person.